You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This is the Decibel Geek Podcast with Aaron Camaro and Chris Sinzak.
You wanted it, and we're going to deliver. That's right, it's time once again for the Decibel Geek Podcast, and everybody loves a good year in review, and man, do we got a good one for you today. I'm Aaron Camaro, joined as always by Chris Sinzak. Man, you look like you've been up all night doing homework. Are you tired, man?
That would be correct.
I know the feeling.
I'm on very low sleep and lots of coffee.
But lots of knowledge gathered about 1978, and we're about to spill it on you. We got so much to talk about today, we don't even have time for Geek of the Week, and we hope you understand, but we're going to get right to it. So, Chris, we always start the year in review and with such important information, so let us know, what are the key stats of 1978?
Okay, 1978, average income per year, $17,000.
Okay.
Average monthly rent, $260.
Nice.
The cost of a gallon of gas was 63 cents.
Wow.
And a pound of bacon was $1.20.
I want to go back.
I know. Bacon, cheap gas, cheap rent.
And all kinds of kick-ass hard rock and heavy metal, and we're going to get right to it. I can't think of a better place to start a year in review than at the beginning, in January. So where do we begin?
Well, in January, Journey released its fourth album, but I think a lot of people would consider it really their first one as far as the era of Journey that everyone came to really know. They released Infinity, which was the first album with Steve Perry. And a few of the tracks in the early sessions were recorded with Robert Fleischman, a friend of the show.
Heck yeah.
And including Anytime and then Wheel in the Sky, which he helped
love
write.
Love that song.
Really good song. But I wanted to pick something that was the first composition between Neil Schon and Steve Perry.
Oh,
And from that day forward, millions of panties became wet and millions of dollars were made.
That's absolutely true. Yeah, Journey would go on to have so many big hit singles. And Neil Sean, awesome guitar player. Man, could that guy write a catchy radio hook?
They were definite pioneers for arena rock.
Yeah, we're going to find a lot of styles changing in 1978 to fit with what's popular at the time. But we're going to find out a little bit more of that later on. I mean, as we go on, we're just going to go right down the line. So what's the next one you got?
Well, also in January, a really cool band from New Jersey that doesn't get nearly enough attention, a band called Stars released, I think it was their third album, called Attention Shoppers. And there's not a ton, there's not a lot of people that know about Stars, but they were like a really good power pop band, and they were a huge influence on a lot of the hair band era, like Motley Crue, Poison, and Twisted Sister. Right, they cite them as influences. And Richie Rano, who is known in Kiss circles, he was one of the main members of Stars, and he helped run a lot of Kiss conventions.
Yeah,
and also did some work with Vinnie Vincent on those conventions. But that's another story for another day. But oh, by the way, here's Vinnie Vincent's musical output this week. Had to bring that one back. That's an oldie but a goodie. So, but
classic.
Yeah, here's a little bit of Stars from Attention Shoppers.
Let's make a new world, a world like the world should be. Let's fill it with air as far as the eye can see. Air where there's earth, air where there's air and where there's sea, and let it all be for me. Come on and let us drink until we nod and wink, until the tears are running down our cheeks. Good air we seek.
Man, I've never heard that before. That is awesome. I love the message.
Yeah, I think those guys like to drink a couple of cocktails.
Man, that's cool.
But also, a band that's kind of a sister band to Stars that a lot of people kind of consider in the same group, but also underrated, was a band called Angel.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's kind of, we should be ashamed of ourselves. We should have played more Angel before now. I mean, and I've heard that from a few listeners. Like,
right.
You guys always ignore Angel.
Because Angel's kind of tied in with Kiss, too, you know, in those circles.
Yeah, they were kind of considered like the
anti-Kiss.
The angelic version,
right.
And Kiss was
where
the
Kiss
devil
was
version.
Kiss black and dark, Angel was white and pretty.
Kiss were Satanists? No, we're not going back there. But yeah, they released White Hot in 1978. It was their fourth album. It was the first without bassist Mickey Jones, so Kiss fans will know, was Lydia Chris's main squeeze when Peter Chris ran off for his next wife. Mm-hmm. Other members of the band included Frank Dimino, Punky Meadows, and Greg Jafria. I think I got that right.
Nice.
That's the name that ties me up. Punky Meadows' look was copied by a lot of people in the 80s. So
yeah.
But yeah, so here's a little bit of Angel.
You know, I can see where a lot of the L.A. bands of the future, you know, get a lot off of bands like Angel and Stars.
Yeah, precursor to the Sunset Strip type stuff.
Yeah,
and
for
that
sure.
Was
not bad.
That was a track called Under Suspicion.
Heck yeah, I like it. You know, that brings us up to February, and on the 10th, a band comes out with their fourth studio album. And, you know, these bands, Journey, they've been great so far, but I think it's time to get a little heavier now. And it's 1978. Oh yeah, heavy metal does represent. With a brand new one from Judas Priest. This is their fourth studio album, and it's the fourth album with the classic Judas Priest logo. Heck yeah, I love it. Classic Judas Priest right there. This was their first album to make the U.S. Billboard Top 200. It was the first one to crack it, and man, it's just an amazing album. It's really kind of, 1978 is a big turning point for Judas Priest, and you can really tell the difference between this album and their next one.
Yeah.
But we'll talk about that in part two.
Yeah, definitely.
The crazy thing about this one, 12 years later after this was released, was when Priest would get involved in that civil lawsuit about the two young men in Nevada that, you know, one killed himself, the other one nearly did, ended up dying later, over supposed hidden subliminal messages in the cover of the Spooky Tooth song Better By You, Better Than Me.
Yeah, shoot, get the
gun. Yeah. So that's, you know, and it's crazy to me that that was 12 years later.
Yeah,
that
is kind of crazy.
I didn't never realize that.
Well, yeah, because when the story came out, I was pretty young, and I remember thinking it's Stained Glass, a new album. I didn't know. Priest, I didn't catch on to. I bought the cassette copy of Screaming for Vengeance when I was like 12, I think.
Yeah, talking about, like I said, you know, 78's a turning point for a lot of bands. I think, you know, Stained Glass kind of represents that and the albums before it. Mm-hmm. And the next album kind of represents a new way of doing things it's a precursor to what's coming in the 80s.
Oh, are you talking about this?
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm talking about. Talking about precursor to things that come in the debut of Van Halen.
Yeah, possibly the greatest debut album of all time.
Yeah, it's, oh man, you got to put it right up there with anybody.
There's not a bad song on the album.
No,
trying to pick
not.
One song was really difficult.
Yeah.
Because I was like, well, let's just pick something that you don't hear all the time.
But, right, that's a good one.
But yeah, every single song on the album is awesome.
Hell yeah.
And I'm not even just kissing ass. It's an awesome album.
No, it is. It is, yeah. Truly. You know, and when it comes to what we do here on the Decibel Geek podcast, you know, there's no way in hell we could talk about 1978 without covering Van Halen.
No.
Because this is a huge turning point in our kind of music.
And the album initially peaked at 19, but it's gone on since to sell over 10 million copies.
Yeah.
And Eddie Van Halen's, the album cover was shot at the Whiskey. That's where they shot the album cover. And Eddie Van Halen's Frankenstrat guitar on the album cover is actually now in the Smithsonian Institute.
Oh, nice.
So I thought that was a cool little fact. And my favorite piece of criticism that I could find in review of this album when it came out was from Rolling Stone critic Charles M. Young in May of 78. He wrote, "Mark my words, in 3 years Van Halen is going to be fat and self-indulgent and disgusting, and they'll follow Deep Purple and Led Zeppelin right into the toilet. In the meantime, they are likely to be a big deal."
Right, so. Yeah. Well, these are the same jokers that put down anything that's hard rock and heavy metal, and they want something that's, you know, thinking man's music, you know, and that's not what, you know, that's not what we're about here.
No, Van Halen
about good time music. Van Halen.
Van Halen thinks with their crotch.
Exactly.
And that's all you really need in rock and roll.
Heck yeah.
So, but before we go to the break, I want to just play a little quick clip of Billy Idol, you know, very well known in the 80s, but some people may not know that he actually had a band in the 70s that put out an album in 1978.
Oh, yeah, Generation X.
Yeah, Generation X. And, you know, they were really big in London. They never really made huge success over here in America. But
he sure did.
Oh, he did. But it's worth noting that they, you know, that they came out with an album that year. So
where it came from.
And we'll be right back after this.
Ready, steady, go.
Now, Deep Thoughts with Ace Frehley.
Curly.
Listen to the Decibel Geek podcast on your iPhone, Android phone, BlackBerry, and WebOS phones with Stitcher. Stitcher's smart radio for your phone. Find it in your app store or at Stitcher.com. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio.
When was the last time you were scared out of your wits by a movie?
Off your Ford or other fine car, nobody has more to do it faster.
And you can put them in any crazy pose you want.
Kiss. That's the name, Kiss. They may look insane, Kiss. It rocks your game, it's Kiss.
Kiss, each 12.5-inch figure sold separately by Mego.
Heck yeah, being a young kid in 1978, I remember all the best toys. And the most popular toys in 1978, Hungry Hungry Hippos.
I remember
yeah.
that.
Yeah, Simon. Remember Simon with the four colors?
Yeah.
Beat Simon, he can never do it.
Well, I beat Simon one day when I threw it against a wall. So, yeah, I have very painful memories of Simon.
You know what the number one selling toy of 1978 was?
No.
Kenner's Star Wars action figures.
That makes sense.
You know what the number two selling toy in 1978 was?
Oh, what?
Kenner's Star Wars vehicles.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
I think we know what movie was big around that time.
Heck yeah. Other big stuff going on toy-wise, Space Invaders for the Atari 2600.
Yeah,
yeah. It's hard to imagine it was that long ago. I guess being younger, your perspective is funny.
Right.
Of course, Matchbox, Hot Wheels, Tonka Trucks is all the big thing.
Made with real metal.
Heck yeah, the real deal. We had it back then.
Back when you could use a Tonka truck as a weapon.
Yeah, you could, a deadly weapon at that. And of course, the Kiss action figures.
The dolls.
They're not dolls, man. Everybody knows if it comes with a weapon or an instrument, it's an action.
Yeah, but the Kiss ones didn't come with instruments, I don't think.
Yeah, they had to have, didn't
they? I think
it
was the later ones that did. I think the initial ones were just the guys.
Well, it was implied that they would have had instruments, so they're action figures.
They didn't need instruments. They were too busy banging Barbie.
Right, for sure. So those are your top toys in 1978. Good stuff.
And hang on for a phone call. And we're back.
And, okay, so let's get back to the rock and roll then. Released on April 9th of 1978, it's their third studio album. This one, it's kind of a wild story. You know, Ritchie Blackmore had dissolved Deep Purple in 1975, and he was planning on doing a solo album with Ronnie James Dio from the band Elf. The solo project, which obviously bring in Dio and it's so awesome, it's not just going to be a project, it's going to become a band. Originally known as Ritchie Blackmore's Rainbow, you know, after time people look at it, they see Dio, they say, you know, Ritchie Blackmore is cool, but it's also Dio. Let's just call it Rainbow. So, you know, it's a great band. They, you know, Ritchie Blackmore is kind of known as a dictator. You know, you ever heard that?
A Renaissance Fair dictator.
A Renaissance Fair yeah. dictator. And he's kind of the boss of everything he does. So he ends up firing half the band halfway through the recording of the album, and he replaces them with other guys, and Dio's just caught up in the middle, and it's an amazing thing, and it's long live rock and roll. You gotta love that from 1978, Long Live Rock and Roll. This would actually be Dio's last album with Rainbow.
Yeah.
Because the Renaissance Fair dictator wants to take it, you know, in less of a Dungeons and Dragons-y kind of, yeah. you know, style and more in something that's, you know, commercially acceptable, and he doesn't feel like he can do that with Dio. So
right.
Dio's gone.
Well,
we'll end up talking about where Dio ends
up
a little bit.
He went on to Blacker Pastures.
Yeah, he did.
But, so what do you got next?
So then coming up next on April 2nd, oh, man, my favorite. My very first Kiss record.
Really?
Double platinum. Heck yeah. Double platinum compilation of Kiss's greatest hits up to that point, including remixed versions of Hard Luck Woman, Calling Dr. Love, Firehouse, and a bunch of other ones on there. It's got She with the Rock Bottom intro on it. I always thought that was weird. Mm-hmm. And it's and a re-recorded version of Strutter called Strutter 78. Yeah, changing times in 1978. Everything's going for that disco kind of a sound, you know, and that the drums on that and the way it's produced kind of has that kind of chicka 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 chicka.
Yeah, the
you know what I mean.
Sean Delaney and Mike Stone were brought in to do all those remixes.
Yeah, and Strutter 78 was produced by a guy named Jimmy Ianer, I believe is how it's
Jimmy
pronounced.
Yeah, Jimmy Ianer. Yeah,
he previously worked with bands like the Bay City Rollers and Three Dog Night.
That's exactly what Kiss was going for.
Yeah, yeah. Of course, the silver reflective album cover with the individual pictures of the band members embossed on the inner gatefold.
Yep.
How cool, man!
A lot of people would take notebook paper and then shade over the faces to try to see what they looked like without the makeup.
Yeah, well, I think we talked about before holding it up reflectively, get your eyes to line up with the members of the band.
Yeah, so they were
cool stuff when you're a little kid. Just discovering rock and roll records.
Can't do that with a digital download these days.
Hell no. Hell no. So we'll keep on moving. The next one I had choice on was released on April 21st of 1978. This guy's seventh studio album, and it's been 8 years since the Beatles have broken up. And, you know, it's Ringo Starr. And I know that's kind of a stretch for the Decibel Geek podcast, but it really kind of ties into what we're doing here. This was, like I said, a seventh studio album. It's called Bad Boy, and it's an attempt to rectify Starr's career. And he's been bitten by the disco bug himself, and it's really hurt the guy's album sales. So he's trying to get back to his basics with this one, but not so much.
That sounds just like Peter Criss's solo album.
Well, there's a very good reason for that. Ringo Starr's Bad Boy in 1978 was produced by a guy named Vinnie Poncia.
Oh, yeah, that guy.
Yeah, you know, and this guy...
So it's his freaking fault.
Well, yeah, in a way, you know, because he'd been collaborating with Starr for quite a while as his musical partner, co-songwriter, and background vocalist. He appears on five of Ringo's solo albums, and, you know, if you look at Ringo Starr in 1978... You can see it's what Peter Criss wants to be.
Right.
But Peter Criss,
totally.
Peter Criss can't be Ringo Starr because he's trapped within the confines of Super Kiss.
That's true.
So you see where this is kind of going.
I could completely hear Peter Criss doing that song on his solo album.
You know what I'm saying?
It sounds exactly like one of the songs
on there. And the crazy thing is, in 1978, Ringo Starr gets his own musical special on TV, and it's just him kind of being a crooner,
right?
You know?
And I saw
that, and it's like, Peter Criss saw this and said, I want a piece of that action.
He decided that would be a blueprint.
How can I do this when I'm still in Kiss?
Yeah, let's not follow what John and Paul are doing. Let's follow what Ringo's doing. Sorry, Ringo.
Well, when you're Peter Criss, you got to, you know, set your goals.
Stick with your drummers.
Yeah, stick with your drummers. Oh, man. So we continue in 1978.
We're into May now.
And, we're getting into May. Sorry about that, guys. I told you there was a tie-in. I didn't want to play Ringo.
We are going to talk about Kiss for 2 hours, aren't we?
Right, you know, in one way or another. But no, here's one for you, talking about Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers. Now, 1978 brings their second studio album, and it's a follow-up to the 1976 self-titled debut and the precursor to the 1979 mega-hit album Damn the Torpedoes.
Oh, yeah.
They go huge after that. At the time, the band was kind of considered heartland rock, along with guys like Bob Seger and Bruce Springsteen, even though the Heartbreakers were from Florida.
Yeah, Gainesville, Florida.
Funny thing. Tom Petty had it. He can rock when he wants to.
Oh, sure. I like a lot of Tom Petty stuff.
I'm not really that much into Tom Petty, you know, because the stuff you hear all the time on the radio, I just can't stand it anymore.
Because a lot of the hits that he had were super overplayed. But,
but some of those deeper cuts on them albums are pretty good gems.
Recommendation, his band before the Heartbreakers was a band called Mudcrutch.
Yeah.
Check them out. They're good. And also, if you haven't seen the 3-hour documentary Running Down a Dream, you have to watch it.
Yeah,
it'll make you into a fan.
Nice. Crazy thing about that, I discovered this. I didn't know Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers get really popular in the United Kingdom way before catching on in the United States.
I didn't know that.
Their first album, they got the song Breakdown, you know, which nowadays everybody knows that song. But at the time, it had to be re-released in 1978 on the FM movie soundtrack, and then it reaches 40 on the charts. Singles from that album, you're going to get it, include I Need to Know. Mm-hmm. That one's a great one. And Listen to Her Heart, which was written about Ike Turner trying to get into Mrs. Petty's panties.
Really?
Yeah, that's what I discovered in doing my homework.
Ike just couldn't keep his hands to himself.
Right.
Whether he was feeling up a girl or beating the shit out of Tina Turner.
There you go. See, it's all coming together in 1978.
Oh, you're talking about Heartland Rock.
Yeah.
'78 saw Bob Seger and the Silver Bullet Band release Stranger in Town.
Heartland Rock.
Total Heartland Rock Detroit. You know, that was their 10th studio album, second with the Silver Bullet Band, and it was certified platinum in less than a month and eventually went on to go 6 times platinum. He was really big in those days.
Yeah, him and the Silver Bullet Band. You know, a lot of these bands, I look back up the list of the ones we mentioned so far, a lot of these bands had opened up for Kiss around this time.
Yeah.
You know, it was. It's amazing.
Ringo
that,
Starr.
Know,
no,
it, well, it made everybody except for Ringo. But Peter wanted to open for him. So
yeah, I'm sure he did.
It all comes together. Let's see. We're going to keep on going. Released on May 25th in 1978. This is their fifth studio album. AC/DC is well on their way to becoming the most popular hard rock band in the world. And Powerage, depending on how you want to say it. Yeah, Powerage. it features a shift to a heavier style that had kind of begun on the Let There Be Rock album. And I think maybe the thicker sound quality probably has a lot to do with bassist Cliff Williams joining the band.
It's my favorite AC/DC album.
It's fantastic. You know, and this was the first one that they've been, before that we talked about this on the Bon Scott episode, how there was like the Australian release and then everybody else got their release. You know, this was the first one that it was just one release internationally, Australia, everybody got it.
Right.
It's amazing stuff. It would reach 133 on the U.S. album charts, one of the greatest rock albums of all time. And we're going to come back for more 1978, but here's your AC/DC for you. It's a rock and roll damnation. Right here in 1978.
A member of the Decibel Geek Army?
You slimy scumbag, get on your face and give me 25.
Join us on our fan page at facebook.com/decibelgeek.
Tuesday.
That little cheat stole a test.
The Fonz hits the fan when Chachi gets expelled. Then.
Match of the century.
It's the thriller in Milwaukee when Laverne and Shirley wrestle for charity. Then.
Dad.
Guess who's been sleeping in Jack's bed?
Baby doll.
On Three's Company. And Harvey's daughter brings home a friend.
We're living together.
How's it working out?
So far, so good.
The Harvey Korman Show.
Watch tomorrow night starting at 8, 7 Central and Mountain.
Peter Frampton, the Bee Gees, Kiss, Linda Ronstadt. You'll find them all in one exciting weekly magazine, Circus. Every week, Circus Magazine reveals the truth about the incredible rock and roll scene.
I'm Jerry Rothberg, editor of Circus Magazine, and I want you to read the toughest, timeliest, gutsiest magazine around.
Read Circus for in-depth reporting about the new drug laws, the facts about birth control, and how to buy stereo equipment. Circus Magazine in color, now at your newsstand every week. Pick up your copy today.
All right, we're in the final stretch of part one of 1978 right here on the Decibel Geek Podcast. And so far, so good, man. A lot of good rock music coming out in 1978. I've been enjoying this thoroughly.
Yeah, me too. I think the extra research paid off for this one.
Heck yeah. And all this great music that you found on today's episode is always available to you. You know, go out there, support these bands. Some of them, they've been around forever. Some of them, you know, maybe never made all the money that they should have. But you can help them out whenever you can by going to Amazon. Actually, before you go to Amazon, go to the www.decibelgeek.com website. Go to our Amazon link right there.
Yeah, right there.
Find every one of these bands and buy their CDs. Support them. Support us. Everybody's happy. Everybody rocks and everybody rolls.
Yeah, and even if you're not going to buy music and you're just going to do some Christmas shopping,
heck yeah,
click on our link, you know, buy something for $30,000 and we'll make some
money. Heck yeah, go and buy you a yacht through Decibel Geek Podcast on Amazon.
Please.
Heck yeah.
Please.
So we're going to continue with 1978. As I said, we got a little bit left, but man, some good stuff coming up before the halfway point of the year. But before we get too far, let's talk about what's going on in TV land in 1978. Of course, you got Super Bowl XII, Dallas over Denver. It would be the first time the championship is played and televised at night.
Really?
Yep. In 1978, we'll see the debut of the Blues Brothers during a Saturday Night Live skit.
Yeah, they were
Saturday Night Live was awesome back in 78, man. You ever get a chance to go back and watch some of that old stuff? Fantastic. We talked about earlier the NBC Ringo music special. Yikes. You can see that on YouTube. But you've been warned. You can squint a little bit and imagine it's Peter Criss. debut shows in 1978. De Plane.
Fantasy Island.
Tattoo. Heck yeah. Mork and Mindy.
Yeah, I love that show.
Taxi. Yeah. Dallas. The Incredible Hulk.
Yeah.
That used to terrify me when I was a kid.
It's funny. It terrified me too, but he was also my hero.
Right. It was crazy. I would never miss it. But when he changed, I would have to run out of the room.
Yeah, I still have Incredible Hulk under ruse.
There's
a mental picture you won't get rid of.
Nice. Oh, man. Ouch. One of my favorite shows of all time, WKRP in Cincinnati. Yeah. Debuts in 78, as well as what you talking about, Willis, Different Strokes.
Yep.
1978. Goodbye in 1978 to the $6 Million Man, Beretta, Rhoda, Carol Burnett, the Bionic Woman, and oh no, Chico and the Man.
Oh, wow.
How did that ever get canceled?
How did that ever get aired?
So there's your TV for 1978, but back to the rock and roll, and you've got the next one.
Okay, well, A little band from Rockford, Illinois named Cheap Trick released Heaven Tonight. It was their third studio album. And the big songs from this album were California Man, Auf Wiedersehen, and of course Surrender. Those are huge songs. This was the first album ever recorded with a 12-string electric bass.
Wow.
Tom Peterson.
Nice.
Quick little Cheap Trick story. I used to know a guy that managed an apartment building here in Nashville, and Tom Peterson was one of his tenants. And he was going to do some repair work up near his floor. And he opened up the door. He's like, you'll appreciate this. He opened up the door and let me look in.
Yeah?
I didn't get to walk in, but I could look at it. I mean, bass guitars as far as you could see.
Nice.
Just everywhere.
That's cool.
It was really cool. I don't think he lives here anymore, but he did back then. I don't know. You know, those are all great songs. But actually, I do have a favorite song from Heaven Tonight. Cheap Trick gets heavy.
Heck yeah, man. Yeah, I love
that's
that.
That's a
album.
Great riff, man.
Yeah, it is. That's Rick one of Nielsen that's got to awesome. Be my favorite Cheap Trick tune.
That's a great song.
Heck yeah.
Can't beat Cheap Trick.
Heck no. 1978, those guys are pretty much at their peak. I mean, Surrender, that's got to be their biggest hit ever, right?
Yeah, that or I Want You to Want Me.
Oh, yeah.
Or The Flame, which the song they hated that they had to do.
Right. Well, it was the times. But 1978 seems like they were doing their own thing and having a good time doing
it.
Also in 1978, the moment everybody's been waiting for. They've been saying, when are we going to talk about it? When are we going to talk about it? The moment is here. The seventh studio album from Foghat.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
As me and my brother used to call them when we would see the classic rock, you know, compilation album commercial.
Yeah.
You'd see the name. My brother and I thought they were called Foghat. We didn't put it together that we were Foghat.
Really, it couldn't be Foghat. So,
I was using drugs at six, sorry.
It seems like it. Foghat's an English blues rock band best known for the songs I Just Want to Make Love to You and Slow Ride.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody knows Slow Ride. Actually, these guys are a little bit different. They're way more popular in the U.S. than they are in their homeland of the United Kingdom. think Foghat's kind of a band that really went on to influence a lot of what was coming, you know, as far as like the 80s glam rock kind of sound, you know, the LA sound, you know what I mean? More than they actually get credit for. The band included Lonesome Dave Peverett on lead vocals and Rod, the magician of rock and roll slide guitar, Price on lead guitar.
Yeah, and the album was Stone Blue. And,
yeah, that's a good one.
And I have a lot of knowledge of Stone Blue, and I'll tell you why. I have an old Circus magazine from 1978, and I bought this magazine because in one little corner there was a picture of Paul Stanley in makeup, and it was said something like, Paul Stanley reveals Kiss secrets. Of course, it was nothing that wasn't really commonly known anyway. But I bought it, and it's been sitting in my bathroom for like the last year. But on the cover of the issue was two guys from Foghat, and Stone Blue was out. So there's this long, in-depth article about the making of Stone Blue. And I'm so lazy, I don't switch magazines out, so I've read that article at least three times. So I know a lot about that album.
Well, then you should have picked Foghat.
I guess I should have. Saved you me beat some me to homework. It, man. Come on.
Both those guys are long dead, but Foghat continues releasing their latest album, Last Train Home, in 2010 with Roger Earl on drums, the only original member left in the band.
Yeah, he was dating Britt Eklund back in those days. Who? I know that because of that article. Britt Eklund, she was an actress who also dated Rod Stewart.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Wow.
See?
The things you learn in the
Synzac bathroom. Yeah.
Foghat may not have been the most popular band in the world, but a lot of people loved him. Here's a band that everybody knew, most popular band of all time, maybe one of them, right up there. Talking about the Rolling Stones and one of their most popular albums released in 1978, talking about Some Girls. Now, this is their sixth studio album in a row since 1971's Sticky Fingers to go number one in the United States. That's how popular we're talking the Stones are.
Yeah, even more than the Bay City Rollers.
Heck, well, yeah, and Three Dog Night combined.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Throw in Vinnie Poncia for it still don't matter. First studio album to officially feature guitarist Ronnie Wood. This guy beats out Jeff Beck and Peter Frampton, among many others, to get that coveted spot that was opened up by Mick Taylor in 74. He did appear on some of the previous album, but was still a member of the Faces. Appearing with the Stones kind of puts an end to the Faces. Rod Stewart don't like it. He don't like it, so the Faces end up breaking up. You know, Ronnie Wood does pretty good for himself. Rod Stewart goes solo, and drummer Kenny Jones, well, he gets a pretty sweet gig in part two of 1978.
But he did.
We'll talk about that later. It's actually a three-guitar lineup with Mick Jagger joining Wood and Keith Richards on guitar on this album. You got to kind of wonder if maybe Mick Jagger decided to pick up the guitar because there was a real good chance that Keith Richards would end up going to prison for what happened to him in Toronto in 1977.
Yeah, he had an interesting year that year.
Yeah, he did. He got busted for heroin up there, but luckily for Keith, the Canadians loved the Stones, and they went light on him and inspired him to clean up his act and kick the heroin addiction by the time the Some Girls got started, the recording sessions.
Canada's a little easy on drug users, as their mayor has proven this week.
That's
old news by the time you hear this.
Right. Some Girls, one of the most recognizable album covers of all time, I think. Yeah. The original featured members of the band as well as a bunch of celebrities who all sued. Lucille Ball, Raquel Welch, Marilyn Monroe, Farrah Fawcett, Liza Minnelli, and more would all have to be removed from the cover in a reissue made. So if you got that original one, you might be sitting on something, and everybody knows the big hit single off of Some Girls was Miss You.
Yeah, that was pretty popular.
Yeah, I'd say.
So
turn on any classic rock station right now. Within 10 minutes, you'll probably hear it.
Yeah. So that pretty much wraps up the first half of 78.
Yeah.
And got one more to play on the way out. You got a couple things you want to say before we go?
I guess just thanks everybody for tuning in once again. You guys asked for 1978, and we're doing our best to deliver it. It's a lot of hard work, but you know, that's our jobs, and we're here to do it. So I hope you enjoyed it.
In about a year, when we recover, we'll go back and listen to it, and we'll get to enjoy it ourselves.
Right.
But now, before we go, just make sure you go to the Facebook page, facebook.com/DecibelGeek. Go to the Twitter page. We're building that fan base there. It's at DecibelGeekPod on Twitter.
Yep. If you're going to pick up music by any of these bands and any other ones or anything else, go to our website. Go through the Amazon link. While you're at the website, check out all the great articles. Our writers are putting up new stuff all the time, and as we found out a week or two ago, they are fantastic.
Or three or four ago.
Yeah, we're not real sure. But at any rate, check it all out and join us right back here next week for part two of 1978.
So playing us out, this is the seventh album by this band. It's the final to feature Aaron's favorite guitarist, Michael Schenker, until 1993. Pete Way, Get Better Man, just for having out he got cancer. Hope he gets better. Produced by Ron Nevison, engineered by Mike Klink. Playing us out is UFO, Pack It Up and Go from Obsession. See ya.
Hey, this is Liberty DeVito.
This is Mike Del Judas.
This is Michael Cavanaugh from Broadway's Moving Out.
This is John Jackson, director of the Billy Joel Archive.
This is Russell Javers.
This is Richie Cannata, and you're listening to Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast. It's awesome.
I'm Michael Grosvenor.
And I'm Jack Fernino.
We're lifelong Billy Joel fans who launched a podcast in 2020 celebrating the music we love.
Whether you're looking for the greatest hits or the B-sides and rarities, you'll find it all here. And if you've ever wondered what happens behind the scenes of a concert or recording session, we've got you covered.
Join us as we explore albums, tours, band members, the latest news, and more. You'll also get a unique glimpse into the music industry straight from the musicians and other professionals who help make it all happen.
Tune in to Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast, at glasshousespod.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast, is a proud member of the Pantheon Podcasts Network.